Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned in to Paranormal Horizons, only on 106.5 KITC FM and Blog Talk Radio. Join your hosts, Jason Ophir and Pat Rice, as we delve into the world of the paranormal, the world of ghosts, UFOs, demons, and even Bigfoot.
Welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Pat Rice.
And I'm Jason Ophir.
We've got another great program lined up, Jason.
Yes.
Yeah, we've got Mord McGee. He's an author of Ghosts of San Francisco, Tales of Eclipse. And he calls that book number one. He'll be on here shortly to kind of explain to us all about that. And yeah, Mord's just a real interesting guy. He's got an interesting background. We'll get into his background a little bit more here on Paranormal Horizons. We'll be with you for about an hour. And Jason, what's been going on in your world? Anything interesting in the paranormal?
Well, you know, I sometimes really look for paranormal stories. And every once in a while, something will pop up in real life, and it'll take me away from the paranormal. So today, one such thing happened. I was going to look for a good paranormal story to talk about. And then we received a phone call, and a person left a message on my phone. And so this is kind of like a PSA for the people out there. What the message consisted of was a person of Indian descent. He had an Indian accent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He gave his name, which was clearly an American name. It was almost like Bob Connor. And he said that he was with some sort of financial department with the Department of Treasury, and some sort of law enforcement action has been taken against us and that we needed to call him and stuff like that.
Oh, my.
So, I mean, it was clearly a scam. Typically, when the government investigates you, they don't warn you of an investigation. So it was a red flag, and also his accent was a red flag as well, because he did not sound like a Bob Connor, you know.
So he was trying to get you to call and then probably try to get some money out of you.
Yeah, probably want some personal information. So knowing it was a scam, I dug a little bit deeper, and I took the number and I put it in Google and saw various similar complaints from that number, to where they were using kind of the same template, but they were just changing the name of the person that was calling.
Well, we'll have to be on the lookout for that call here in my home, and there's so much of that going on, so thanks for bringing that forward.
We had one time, you know, another big one that's going around are people claiming to be from Microsoft saying that your computer is infected with a virus. And we've gotten those as well. You know, they want you to give them, and they show you how to do so that they can have remote access to your computer. So it's all scams.
Right. They try to get you to go to your computer right away, and it's kind of the same situation you described. It's a person with a distinct accent that is not American, but they have a very American name, like Brian Jones or you know, Fred Flintstone, whatever. But well, I've got one excuse me for you, Jason. this is just a real quick little blurb that I saw on the internet today, but there is a chess expert. He's considered the world's best chess player ever. His name is Garry Kasparov, or Kasparov, I may be saying that incorrectly, and he believes that chess was invented by aliens.
That I hadn't heard before.
Me either. And he believes he's also been abducted by aliens as well.
Well, that I believe. I don't know if I believe that chess was actually invented by aliens.
Yeah, and I just, it was a real quick blurb. I didn't get to do any Google on him and find out more information, but I thought that was interesting. You know, last week on the show, we had Misa Johnston, who had so much information about aliens, and she has an organization to support folks that have been allegedly abducted against their will by several different types of aliens. So it was quite an interesting conversation with her last week.
Yeah, it was, and it was one that I could really relate to, having my own interesting experiences.
Yeah, and I thought that some of the experiences that she described were, you know, really interesting, and not just the grays that she encountered, but also reptilians, other aliens that looked like, I think she called them insectoids. So that was kind of amazing, some of the things that she had to say, and, you know, government organizations that are in existence now that know a lot more about aliens than they're letting on, or they're already in communication. And that, I find that subject quite fascinating.
So do you think, I mean, we hear so many things about UFOs, and, you know, a lot of things flying in the skies are going to be misidentified because they're secret aircraft. But do you think that the government is actually has alien technology, like in Area 51 and other places?
I think it's very possible. I really do.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, it looks like our guest is in the queue, Jason. I'm going to talk a little bit more about him, but you're kind of running the board tonight, so I'll let you hit the button to get him here on the line here shortly. And just to let everyone know, we will be with you for about another 50 minutes or so to the top of the hour. About halfway through, we'd like to take a little commercial break. And we are going to be in the chat room. I'm going to get in there here in a few minutes. Are you in the chat room, Jason?
I am, yep.
All right. So if you want to chat with us, be sure to go there right on the Blog Talk Radio page. You can hit the chat button, and it'll take you right there. But I wanted to give a more thorough introduction for Mord McGee. He's a retired rock musician and has been called the heavy metal of literature. He is writing a wild blend of sex, drugs, and rock and roll science fiction. And I've been reading his book that we're going to talk about tonight, Ghosts of San Francisco, and it definitely has that flavor. It's really interesting the way that he's written it, and he's going to tell us more about it. And that's all I've got to say about Mord until we can talk to him live, Jason.
All righty, I will bring him on. Mord, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. How's it going, man?
Hey, what's up, guys? Can
a
you hear me?
A little rock and a little roll.
Yeah, a little rock and roll.
Well, first off, who was it that was touching the button? He's got a good touch.
That's me, Pat Wright.
Very nice. Hey, it's finally nice to talk to you guys. We've been back and forth for like 3 months.
Yeah, I know.
And I wanted to say, too, Mord, that we have, you very generously sent us some books, and we've given a couple of away last week, and I want to let everyone out there know that if you'd like to receive Mord's first book, Ghosts of San Francisco, just send us a Facebook message with your name and address, and we will send you a book.
On the Paranormal Horizons page. Make sure it's on that page.
Right, the Paranormal Horizons page. So Mord, you're a retired musician. How come you're not doing that anymore?
Well, I had an injury that took away the feeling in two of my fingers, so I can still play, but I can't do it as well as I used to. It just got to be too much.
Right. Did you play guitar or bass?
Most of the time I was the guitarist or the singer.
Okay.
Or both. I don't really get into too much about who I was with.
Right.
And
that's okay.
Now and again, I still pick a guitar up now and again and sing.
Yeah. Well, it's hard not to after it sounds like you've been a musician for a long time, and now here you are, you're writing books.
It's totally full circle.
Yeah. Now, Mord, I wanted to mention to the audience, and this is on the back of your book, Ghosts of San Francisco. I'm just going to read this for the audience. Ghosts are real. When something moves in the corner of your eye and is gone when you turn to look, when you feel like you're being followed, when the knife is in a different place on the kitchen counter than where you just set it, you're not imagining things. This is the future. Now, how does that tie in? Because this book, Ghosts of San Francisco, is about the future, correct? You've written it, the main character, which is Trixie. It's a futuristic book. Is that how you would describe it?
Absolutely. It's set about 200, 250 or so years in our future.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the connotation for the ghosts, right now, ghost to us is something paranormal. Obviously, we're on Paranormal Horizons. We have psychics that can talk to ghosts, sense ghosts. There's a bunch of different interpretations. What I propose in the book, there's only one left. Ghosts that are actually created by technology.
Okay, I didn't get to that part yet in the book. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. And not only are there ghosts created by technology, there's no longer that, did I see the kitchen knife move? It did. The thing that's really scary is it's someone that doesn't like me that just did that, because they can actually physically interact with the living, these digital projections of people.
Okay. Almost,
kind of sounds like the Matrix, kind of a trippy thing. It's an interesting concept. I like the idea of technology creating, you know, manipulating things in the physical world. Is that kind of how it is, you know, creating these images of ghosts kind of thing?
That's sort of the idea. I don't want to give away too many spoilers because I have a new book coming out called Murder Red Ink that bridges the gap about halfway between now and Tales of Eclipse. And this one gets a little more into the actual software and the way things develop and how they become as, I don't know if you guys read, but I don't normally buy into when someone says something is dystopian.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of just look at it as history repeating itself. Mankind seems to do quite a bit of bad things to one another over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
So to me, when you're looking in the future and you're saying, well, technology is going to have more applications than it does now, become more oppressive, become just everywhere, saturate everything, I don't see it as dystopia. I see it as inevitable. So that's sort of where it all is heading.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's really a cool concept, Mord. Now, with that, kind of what you're talking about, the digital projections of people, and again, we're talking about Mord's first book, Ghosts of San Francisco, it also seems kind of sci-fi.
Absolutely. There are roots of sci-fi in it, and what's really strange is I don't read sci-fi. I read a lot of fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my favorite authors are fantasy authors. And when I went to college umpteen hundred years ago, I was a science guy. So these kind of thoughts have just been hanging around in the back of my head. And I always tell people, well, about a year ago I fell and hit my head, and that's not really the case.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of clicked, and I just decided to give it a shot. And I wasn't trying to do anything super crazy or change the world. I was just writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I got lucky. So.
Yeah. Now, what is the influence of San Francisco in your book, Ghosts of San Francisco? Is that somewhere that you hung out or lived?
My wife and I took a train. We took Amtrak across the country a couple of times. And the Eclipse books, I guess it's not giving too much away now, but the Eclipse books are going to take place in major rail cities. San Francisco is a major rail city.
Right.
Chicago is a major rail city. I haven't moved much further east. Some of it does take part in Pittsburgh. But the book actually bounces back and forth through those because as a backdrop to these ghosts and everything else that's going on, the people who are sort of downtrodden have become the ones that are most desirable to corporations to take care of their dirty work.
Mm-hmm.
So the main characters sort of revolve around that. It's the evolution of someone who was homeless.
Yeah.
Getting into a biker gang like Jason does. And then almost becoming assassins, enhanced and trained by people with tons of money because they have no ties whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. And in your book, in this book, and again, I've only gotten to about the fifth chapter. I apologize, I haven't read the whole thing. But, and again, I don't want to give away too much to the audience that's listening because it's a good read. But your main character, Trixie Stardust.
Yep.
She has, you know, like the book starts out, like, and she's had pretty hard time in her life.
She sort of wakes up as a runaway. In the past, San Francisco has been known to harbor runaways in the Haight-Ashbury and stuff like that. And it's sort of just repeating itself in the same way.
In the future.
And she has some hard times that she has to overcome, some moments that any woman is most likely going to face in their life, given the chances and the numbers and the odds. And it's through her just inner strength that she is able to move forward. And like you said, not trying to give too much away, but she definitely changes.
Yeah.
She grows.
Right, and it's interesting because she, at one point, at the beginning of the book, she really could have died or should have died.
Absolutely.
And then things happen, and she, kind of a miracle that she even stays alive, and then, you know, as the story goes on, and then there's some other characters. I was just kind of reading about Slicer.
Mm-hmm.
And just for everybody out there, that's another character in Mord's book who's interesting too. And yeah, I got to the point too where I was really not wanting to put the book down, Mord. So I really want to tell everybody out there, this is a great book. And if you'd like a free copy of Mord McGee, and I'm saying your name right, McGee?
You are, yes.
Okay, good, because you've got that H in there, so I just wanted to make sure. If you'd like a free copy of his book, please contact us on Paranormal Horizons with your name and address, and we will be happy to send you a copy. Ghosts of San Francisco, Tales of Eclipse. Now, Mord, how long did it take you to write the book?
The original idea was penned down, about 20 years ago. In fact, a couple of short stories were published with the main characters. And then I put it away. I didn't write for about 20 years. And then I picked it up about a year ago. So I would say from beginning to end, maybe 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to write a book, but I just don't have the discipline. I know it takes a lot of time and discipline. It's always kind of been something on my back burner is I should write a book. Because it's one of the few things in life I'm actually good at. I need to get on it.
Yeah, Jason, what are you going to write a book about?
I don't know. But when we have authors come on talking about their books, it's just there's this little bird on my shoulder that says, God, you should, do it, you know.
Yeah.
You should write about that little ancient alien birthing out of your hand.
Yeah, we'll find out. And what Mord's referring to is I was in a laboratory today and we did swabs of our hands and to see what grows on it. And I know what's going to grow off my hand, you know, off the swab and the petri dish ain't going to be pretty. I'm just a dirty big biker, so, you know, there's going to be all sorts of bacteria. But anyways, getting back to Mord.
A dirty big biker. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I know Mord doesn't want to give away too much on the book, and I wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity because we had chatted a little bit. And now you have some interesting cryptozoology. Is that correct?
That is true. What you're referring to is probably the trip I had this summer in book number 3 that's a project pending.
Okay.
Was Have this you like ever... a real experience with a creature?
Well, here's one of those things. I've only had one experience with paranormal that I really can't explain, and I'm not a huge believer in that kind of thing. I'm a bit of a skeptic. So I had an idea to write a fantasy book, something that's a little bit different pace. And the idea led me to a trip along the Niagara Highway. So from Niagara Falls all the way up through upstate New York, stopping in a bunch of little towns, looking at the evolution of lakes, little cities on lakes, it used to be steamers, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The actual end of the trip was to go to Lake Champlain and spend a little time searching for Champ, the America's version of the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh.
I've never heard of that.
Not to be super.
Actually.
Oh, you haven't? Yeah, it's...
Oh.
And what's his
fairly
name,
well-known thing.
Mord? What do they call that creature?
They call him Champ.
Okay, like C-H-A-M-P?
Absolutely.
Okay, Champ. All right.
And Champ, Lake Champlain, is a very similar body of water to Loch Ness. It's something that was frozen in the Ice Age, similar as far as where it is on the Earth. And it didn't go as well, cryptozoology-wise, as I hoped. I spent a couple of days both on the New York side and the Vermont side, and there was a lot less Champ than I I was led to believe by the old In Search of TV shows, by the more modern Monster Quest shows. It just was a lot less there than I expected.
Mm-hmm. I've watched several of those Monster Quests, and you're always hoping that they catch something. But it always seems like they get close, but they never have any kind of, you know, definitive OMG moments, you know, like,
right,
there's the monster.
Well, the monster squid, you know, I guess they did capture the monster squid. And there's some interesting footage with lake monsters and Champ. There was a really interesting video from off the coast of Florida that they think might have been a deformed manatee. You know, there's some interesting footage, but for the most part, when I talk to locals there, they seem to think that it was just a tourist scheme. And after a week or so, I started to kind of believe the locals. Now, that didn't stop me from buying a whole bunch of little knickknacks at Champ. I came back with coffee cups and, you know, magnets and all kinds of fun stuff. But, yeah, no actual sightings of a lake monster.
Darn.
I've never heard of Champ before. I know that I know some other places in the world have Loch Ness type monsters, but I've never heard of one in the United States. And yeah, I'm kind of with you. You know, there are certain things that I believe more of, like UFOs. But you start getting into other areas like cryptozoology, I'm really kind of a big skeptic with the whole Bigfoot and lake monsters. And but that's not to say that it can't be a creature, you know, back from prehistoric days that has remained hidden. I'm still kind of skeptical about it. I think there'd be more evidence.
Yeah, there has been some major finds, and it because of that, you can never say it's impossible. But yeah, something big like that it would shock me. Let's just put it that way. It would shock me.
Yeah, I did have the opportunity years ago to go to Scotland, and I went to Loch Ness and tried to see the Loch Ness monster. I didn't get to see. He did not reveal himself to me either. But of course, that's a lore, or you know, that's been going on for a lot of years. And I think that that's in the Scottish Highlands, of course, the Loch Ness monster. But I had read something. It seems like a couple of years ago where they. I don't know, they found some sort of big skeleton type thing, and they thought, this is the Loch Ness monster. He's dead now. Did you guys hear about that?
I did.
I don't know. I haven't.
Not only did I hear about it, but they had if it was Monster Quest or a special on TV, they had something about the death of the Loch Ness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of sad because, you know, it's like the town, well, they probably still get a lot of people coming there too, but it'd been a lot of years that people had been going there. I think it was back in the 30s when it was the first, you know, claim that someone saw the lake monster. And,
right.
Yeah, so who knows,
The whole surgeon's photo scam kind of threw that into the wind.
Mm-hmm.
Where they find out that it was, you know, was the guy's name Marmaduke Weatherall? Is that his name?
Mm,
he was a well-known. He was a guy that would search for monsters. He did something with the media where he was always involved. And there was a big search for Loch Ness Monster, and he somehow faked footprints using a rhino foot, and he was embarrassed. And then he found a friend of his who had a very reputable surgeon friend, and he's the one that produced the actual picture that we all know of, the Loch Ness Monster. And it turned out many years later, that he had hired the guy to turn the picture into the media.
Oh.
And that, was that that really old, famous picture, the one you're talking about?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
The one is kind of like a what do you call it, a plesiosaur head sort of a thing.
Yeah. And he's kind of coming out of the water.
That's the one.
Yeah.
If you look up the surgeon's photo, you'll see the background behind it. But, you know.
Very
so that's
interesting.
Like, that's a documented fake then, so there's no question about that photo being real? Okay.
Right. Right. That one particular one, correct. And, you know, I have a contact that I talk to now and again. His name's Lauren Coleman. And he runs the International Cryptozoology Museum in Maine, Portland, Maine. And I think he has a lot of that stuff in the museum, a lot of different things on the site. Really cool guy, nice guy. He's been ill for a little bit, but really, really influential guy in the annals of Bigfoot and different cryptozoology things over the years.
That would be interesting, yeah.
Sounds like we need to talk to him because, you know, the one subject that we don't talk a whole lot about on this show is Bigfoot and cryptozoology. We need more of that because it's. And I'm not an expert on it, so.
Yeah, we would like to talk about Bigfoot more.
Did you guys happen to catch that Survivor Man, where he experienced some things unexplained? And he wasn't planning. He wasn't looking for Bigfoot. He was just out in the woods. And
no,
he came
I
across
didn't
some
see
things.
That episode.
Yeah.
Shows.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to say, I've seen some clips on YouTube, but I never watched them. I think I'll go back and watch them.
Wow, I think you might find it interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm
Definitely.
Making a note of that. Well, listen, before we go on, everyone, we're having a great conversation with Mord McGee about his book, Ghosts of San Francisco, and he'll also tell us more about some of his upcoming books. But let's go ahead and take a quick break here on Paranormal Horizons and KITCFM 106.5. Stay tuned for more conversation.
We'll be right back.
Ghosts of San Francisco.
Are you into international intrigue? Secret societies? Ghosts? And nonstop violence, then you're going to want to check out Mord McGee's novel, Ghosts of San Francisco. Ghosts are real. It's a scientific reality. These aren't your clanking chains, sheet over the head ghosts that your grandmother warned you about. These are the future, when something moves in the corner of your eye and is gone when you turn to look. When you feel like you're being followed. When the knife is in a different place on the kitchen counter than where you just set it. You're not imagining things. Ghosts are real. Add that to international intrigue, secret societies, and super powerful world corporations, and you have Ghost of San Francisco, the explosive debut novel by Mord McGee, Volume 1 of Tales of the Eclipse.
Well, right on. Hey, Mord, where can people get your book, by the way?
The primary dealer is Amazon. If you just Google Mord McGee, you'll find all sorts of embarrassing things about me, but you will be able to find a paper trail back to different retailers that sell it. It's available all around the world.
All right.
I don't read all the languages, but I see the cool-looking, advertisements and stuff.
Yeah,
but
that must be exciting to see that after writing your first book. And by the way, everyone out there, if you're listening and you'd like a copy of Mord's book, just send us a note on our Paranormal Horizons Facebook page with your name and your address, or if you don't want to post your address, give me something and I will contact you and get you one of his books.
Pat is the gate bookkeeper. the bookkeeper.
I am.
Nice. And I'll give personal handwritten apologies if necessary.
All right, we may have to accept that. Who knows? But now, and we were also got into a conversation about cryptozoology and Bigfoot, and we were talking about the Loch Ness Monster, and Mord, you were telling us about this American
Champ.
Equivalent of the Loch Ness called Champ, and you actually went to that lake. But never got to see him, unfortunately.
Well, I never got to see the living creature. I did get to see all the little images that the town of Port Henry incorporated into their Chamber of Commerce sign and their bridge signs. There was plenty of Champ on it. Just wasn't the one in the water.
I see. Yeah. That
makes me
kind of
wonder.
Scotland too.
It makes me kind of wonder if it's like, you almost wonder if it's like a tourist kind of ploy to get people to come to a location. I don't know. It just makes me wonder.
You know? Jason, I thought that at first. And well, I'll tell this little story when I actually went into the New York side of the lake. The Vermont side is a whole different vibe. But the New York side of the lake is this little town. And that's what I had envisioned, that it was like a big tourist draw. There would be people there and things going on. It was very quiet. It was very beautiful. I actually posted a few pictures at the time. And there was only two people on the beach. I was part boardwalk, part beach. So one was a kid fishing, and I just kind of joked around and said, "Hey, did you catch Champ yet?" He said, "No." And the other was his mom. So I asked her, because I do this, I just walk up to strangers sometimes. I said, "Hey, have you ever seen Champ?" She said, "I've been living here my entire life, never seen Champ." I said, "I would think that there would be more tourism, more people here." And she kind of put her finger over her mouth and said, "Shh, we don't want people to come look." So I don't know now. I'm kind of a little confused about it. It's very strange.
Yeah, and I can understand that, you know, they don't want their town to turn into a big tourist attraction like that.
Right. The big reason I had even heard of Port Henry was there was a TV show called, I want to say it was called Weirdville or Monsterville or something like that. And it was a, you know, a similar In Search Of or Weird Time USA, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it really made it seem like the whole town was about this sighting. The big sighting was in the 70s. And I think the photo is called the Mancy Photograph. So if you actually, I don't know if you're near a computer, if you Google the Mancy photograph, M-A-N-S-I, that's the big one for Lake Champlain.
Okay.
But
I'm Googling it right now.
They're going into Port Henry. Beside the road is a board that has the official sightings that were reported. And, again, those are some pictures that I had put up during this road trip. So I don't know if anyone had got a chance to look at those, but it's pretty well known. I mean, there's just a couple of boards there that have sightings that go all the way back to Samuel D. Champlain, the original explorer in the area.
Hmm.
So this one goes back even further than what we know of Loch Ness Monster.
So I'm looking at a picture of it now, and it's very reminiscent of the photo from Loch Ness. If you look at the photograph, there's a black and white photograph, and in this, just my impression from a quick glance at it is the scale of the object, or the creature in the photograph, looks like it would have to be quite large. So So it doesn't appear to me, you know, to be like somebody putting a small serpent out there or whatever, because it's out in the lake a little ways. So I don't know, but it's got the whole long neck thing. It's kind of tilted and it's got a funny shaped head, but it's very the Loch Ness type look to it.
It's Nessie's cousin.
It is Nessie's cousin. That's where the theory goes. It is Nessie's cousin.
Yeah. What I just pulled up on the web, too, it's saying there had been over 300 reported sightings over the years.
Mm-hmm. I think it was 1609 was the first one. It was around the 1600s.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
That's a lot of sightings. That's a lot of people getting, you know, if you think people are just misidentifying. So I don't see how you could misidentify anything. I don't know anything in the natural world that would look like that. So it's either real to me or it's an outright elaborate hoax.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't look like a bird. It doesn't look like a snake. It doesn't, you know, nothing like that.
Right.
It also says that P.T. Barnum, you know, we all know him from the circus, Champ became so popular in the late 19th century that P.T. Barnum put a reward out of $50,000 for anyone who could bring the carcass of Champ. But nobody ever did. That would have been a lot of money.
The Fiji mermaid.
Yeah,
they, that's a lot of money. They brought him the Fiji mermaid, but not Champ.
Yeah, now that's another interesting subject, too, mermaids.
Yeah, I don't believe in mermaids, sorry.
Well, there's some interesting stuff out there on those, but we'll have to save that for another show. But now, Mord, have you ever done any searching or research for Bigfoot?
No. Actually, okay. I haven't gone into the woods. Have I done research? Yes, a ton of research. Have I actually gone into the woods and yelled and banged sticks? No. I do have big shirts and pictures and all sorts of stuff. But, again, it's sort of just because I'm a monster file. I just like that stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, well, what do you think Bigfoot is? Other than a big hairy creature.
The most compelling argument I've heard so far, and I really apologize that I forget the scientist's name.
Oh,
but,
that's okay.
But she is someone who has most recently discovered an actual, I don't know if it was an ape or, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but she's kind of an expert on finding them.
Is that Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum? Was that Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum? Is that the guy?
Jeffrey Meldrum does he's an expert on the footprints.
Oh, okay.
He's one of them. He was part of a group. There was about four people. One guy was a fingerprint expert. One guy was a great ape expert. This other lady was somehow involved with identifying the last large monkey of some sort, for any, you know, lack of a better term, because I don't know any better, within the last 15 years or so. Well, they came to the conclusion that the Orang Pendek in, I don't know if it was Indonesia or New Zealand, somewhere over that way, is very likely a real creature. And they said in the Pacific Northwest, and I kind of tend to buy into this, most of the sightings can go back to tribesmen, tribe elders, shamans, that do a rite of passage where they go into the wild. They actually put on moss suits to deal with the weather, like tree moss. And whenever people get near, they throw rocks to keep them away from the sacred ground. And they can do this for 20 years in seclusion. And when they actually kind of traced back all of the sightings over the years, they started erasing the ones that showed up on the map after the Patterson-Gimlin film. And they all kind of circled around one part of the Pacific Northwest where there was a tribe of Indians where the shamans had been doing this for a long time. So according to them, that's where the origins came from. And I kind of buy into that. That's actually a pretty good theory.
That's very interesting. I've never heard that before, Mort. And that, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me.
The name of the show was The Definitive Bigfoot Guide. And it was within the last 2 or 3 years.
Okay. The Definitive Bigfoot Guide.
That's a good way to get shot. And Pat, you know what my opinion on Bigfoot is.
I know, but doesn't this kind of make sense that it really could have just been some Indians or some shamans?
No, that
in
makes
their,
total sense.
Their outfits, so to speak.
And that's dangerous. And, I mean, if that was now, what years was that happening? Because if there were guns around, last thing I would do is dress up in an ape suit or animal skins and go tromping through the woods. Nowadays, anyway.
Yeah. Well, there were definitely guns around. So, but, you know, if it's a rite of passage and it's something you do to become a shaman, you're not thinking about guns.
That is true, yeah.
Yeah, and there have been, throughout the Bigfoot stories and things like that, where there have been claims that some Indians, and I don't know which ones or anything or exactly when, but, you know, years ago, claimed that, oh, a Bigfoot visited them, that they would occasionally see a Bigfoot. But that story could have gotten mixed up into kind of what you're describing, more that it was more of a, you know, they were dressing up in their regalia, if you will, and who knows, you know, how these stories get passed on. And of course, there's the story in Daniel Boone's journal that he wrote that he thought he was killing a bear, and this was in the Kentucky woods, and then it ended up, he described it as a big, you know, hairy man.
Yeah. Oh, there's a ton of theories.
Yeah.
And it's certainly, you know, something that's fun to read, fun to look into, but I just don't want to run around in the woods screaming back and forth.
I know. I don't blame you at all.
Yeah. I don't like mosquitoes.
Yeah, you and me both. I hate mosquitoes. I've talked to Jeffrey Meldrum. I've talked to other people such as J.C. Johnson. And my main bone of contention with being a skeptic with Bigfoot is, you know, how come you would think with all the people that enjoy the outdoors that we would have eventually come across a body or come up with some really definitive DNA evidence. And the argument that I got back was that Bigfoot or Big Feet or whatever the plural is, they could also bury their dead. And that was a good, valid point. But, you know, I still find myself pretty skeptical on the whole Bigfoot thing.
Yeah, for sure. Now, I want to make sure, again, Mort, that everyone knows. I know I've said it a couple of times, but just in case we have some new listeners, you can find Mort's book on Amazon.com, of course, or you can just do a Google Mort McGee to find out how to get his book, Ghosts of San Francisco, Tales of Eclipse. Now,
right.
You've got Murder, it's called Murder Red Ink, is your book you're working on now, correct?
Right. It's just about the final stages. Just a side note, too. Barnes & Noble does carry Ghosts of San Francisco. A lot of the time you have to actually order it at the desk. The actual publisher that did the work doesn't believe in just making a mass hard copy blitz and then having
right.
to eat books that don't sell on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
But Barnes & Noble does carry it. You can buy it online from them. And Half Price Books also lists it. So
okay.
there's, you know, there's, it's out there. Anyway,
right on.
Murder Red Ink. Murder Red Ink. This is halfway to the nightmare that Trixie has to deal with. And it's a book that revolves around the actual development of the program that makes ghosts into an absolute, where there's
okay.
you know, no question anymore. And the whole thing revolves around a couple different murder mysteries. The major one is the Jack the Ripper crimes. It takes a good
okay.
hard look at the Jack the Ripper crimes, and it does reveal some things at the end about who the main character determines Jack the Ripper to be. Purely fictional, but it is inspired, and it does include some things that tie into real life. The other thing is the JFK assassination. A good portion of the book deals with that. Now, I know you didn't. You said you didn't get to finish Ghosts of San Francisco, but it mentions in the beginning
mm-hmm.
that a bunch of these lingering mysteries have been solved because of the ghost program. Hackers were able to become ghosts and go into these long vaulted secrets, government secrets.
Right, right, yeah.
So this book kind of touches into that. And it sort of tries to bridge the gap.
Okay.
So if you're into horror,
well,
you're into Jack the Ripper, it's the kind of thing that you might like. If you're
yeah,
squeamish.
Well, I want to read it for sure. Now it's not complete yet, right?
It is actually complete. It is in a galley. Is a copy of a book that has not been edited for
mm-hmm.
Line edits for mistake. I actually have a physical galley, so it's that close. Now it wasn't going to come out until March. But with the news that hit a couple weeks ago with DNA stuff and Jack the Ripper,
mm-hmm.
I was sort of asked to maybe expedite it a little bit. And I put about 90 hours in over the course of a weekend.
Oh, my.
Wow.
So I put just a whole bunch of time and got it moving forward a little quicker than we thought it might be. So,
well, that's fantastic. Now, I'm not familiar with what just came out on the DNA on Jack the Ripper, Mord. What did they discover?
Now, I don't want to... I'm not allowed to swear, am I?
Okay.
I don't want to aggravate any Ripper people.
Well, there was, you know, some theory or that Jack the Ripper was one of the royal family.
Yes, there's been a zillion theories thrown about.
Yeah,
that's a big one. And like I said, I don't want to aggravate any Ripper people because Murder Red Ink isn't going to tell you who Jack the Ripper is. It is going to tell you who one of the main characters thinks Jack the Ripper it is.
Okay.
The big thing that happened a couple weeks ago is. And I don't know that I have it 100% correct. It's just kind of what I gather from following all the different experts. There's a couple really good ones out there. There was a policeman who spirited away a shawl after a murder scene, knowing that a couple hundred years later, it might be important to have a blood stain and make a DNA test. And the DNA test was one that limits it down to, I don't know, 30-40% of likelihood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even like really that definitive. But it's supposedly the blood on this shawl that never really appeared in any official documentation because it was, you know, the guy kind of snuck it away. all of a sudden the DNA on this points to one suspect in particular. The guy was a barber. I think his name was Aaron Kosminski. Now, that has nothing to do with Murder Red Ink. The two of them are just kind of apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
My book, it doesn't matter who it is, who the actual Ripper was. It's more about that scare, that whole time, that whole period of it just being scary.
Right.
So it's kind of more like
it was
that.
A horror. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was the evolution of the modern-day serial killer. I mean, that was the first big one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Right.
Now, that's more
where mine is.
Now, you mentioned Rippers, you know, people. Are there actually people out there that are so into this Jack the Ripper thing that they're, like, obsessed with it? Because you mentioned you didn't want to upset Rippers, and that surprises me that, you know, a crime a couple hundred years ago, you'd have all these, like, Jack the Ripper addicts.
Yes. There is a giant subculture. I actually got interested in Ripper stuff years ago, just kind of reading a book here, reading a book there, and I didn't realize how big it was. My bio, it doesn't say anything about being an online gamer, but I ran into someone years ago in an online game, and he told me he would travel around to Ripper conferences.
Oh my God.
And I was fascinated. I was like, really?
Yeah.
But yeah, the guy said, oh yeah, there's conferences, conventions. So once they finished this book and it came back from the publisher and they said, absolutely, we're moving forward with this. This is great. It's nice. I decided to start looking around for, you know, I just started searching for Ripper boards on Facebook, on Twitter, that kind of thing. And there's a ton of them. There are a ton of people that still meet year after year that go over the theories that come about. There's even when you go to the one in London, you even get a box full of goodies that are like, you know, stuff, like Ripper badges.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
There is a whole thing going on. So if you ever look, around.
Very interesting. Gosh,
yeah.
Wow. You know, we are almost running out of time here, Mord, but it's really been a pleasure to have you on Paranormal Horizons. And if you're listening to this show tonight on Tuesday, I just want everyone to know that this episode will be rebroadcast on Saturday, 10 p.m. Pacific time, on KITCFM.com. So there's another opportunity to hear this show there, although you can always download past episodes from Blog Talk Radio.
We're on the radio?
Yeah. Blog Talk Internet Radio.
I thought we were just talking on the phone.
Well, we are, yeah, but we snuck it in, you know. We've got you on the internet airwaves, if you will. So
yeah, I kept telling you guys, I'm just not interested. I've been listening to your show, and I'm just not interesting. You have some guests on that have the greatest stories. I mean, guys, it just blow me away. I listen to it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh man, I'm gonna go on, and I better have the six pack under me, because I don't know how I'm gonna ramble through 20 minutes. But the two of you have made it great.
Thank
you guys for that. Number one.
Yeah. Well,
hey, we've learned a lot tonight, because I did not know about Champ, American Loch Ness Monster. So. That's new to me. I got to look.
Well,
into
and then
it.
The whole Bigfoot thing, Mort,
yeah.
That you told us—that was fascinating. That, you know, maybe it was something that was going on in the culture of these Indians, and then also we found out more about, you know, Jack the Ripper groups. But do want to remind everyone Mord McGee, author, Ghosts of San Francisco, Tales of Eclipse, Murder, Red Ink, coming out. So what do you think? Maybe early 2015 you'll have that book out?
They're actually hoping sooner now.
Okay.
They were pushing for Halloween, but I got to be honest. I'm not so sure about that because it has to go to a couple of pre-readers for blurbs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe for the Christmas rush. I don't know. I'm not real sure yet.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes these things do take time. So we want to thank you again, Mord, for being on Paranormal Horizons. And just, you know, promise us you'll come again as a guest and we can continue these interesting conversations. We'd love to have you on after Murder, Red Ink comes out. And
yeah,
then we can talk about that book. Yeah.
That'd be cool. And I'll tell you what, I owe you guys, I'll play you a song at some point when it's not so late here. I'd be afraid I'd wake up my neighbors.
Okay.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
We would love that. All right. All right, Mord. Well, thank you for staying up, too, because I know it's late in your neck of the woods, and we really appreciate that here on Paranormal Horizons. So we will talk with you again.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Good night.
Take it easy.
Good night, Mord. Thanks.
All right. Well, that was just great conversation, Jason. And I do want to tell everyone, you know, like I said, I'm about in the fifth chapter of Ghosts of San Francisco. And the way that Mord has written this book, at first when I started reading it, I was like, well, wait a minute, this isn't about ghosts. What's going on? But then it all comes together. So if you like sci-fi and intrigue, and then there is ghost stuff in here too, this is a good book that you'll want to get your hands on. And again, if you want a free copy, just let us know on our Paranormal Horizons Facebook page and we'll send you one.
Yeah, and don't be shy to give us a like. You know, we're pushing almost 1,000 likes on that page, and it's not a very old page, so I really want to hit that 1K mark. It's like I'm fixated on it, Pat.
Yeah, when we will. Yeah, definitely like us on Facebook. And I wanted to mention a couple of other quick things, Jason, before we sign off. Our station that we are aired on Saturdays, KITC-FM, there's another station that is being created. These are community radio stations. They're nonprofit. They don't make any money, but they have complete freedom of what they get to play on the airwaves. So people like us get to have shows, and we have our show on KITC-FM, and there's a new station that is being, like I said, we're raising money for that. And if you go to kickstarter.com, KNCP, you can give a donation of anything, $1, $5, anything would help. So that's kickstarter.com, KNCP, to help out another community radio station. And also next week, October 7th, it'll be, we have Cherry Devine is our special guest.
Can't wait for that.
Yeah. Now, you've talked to her a little bit, Jason. What's kind of her thing?
Well, I've known her for many years, actually, because we used to be coworkers together many years ago in retail loss prevention, you know, catching employees stealing, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I actually knew her. We worked together before she started into this channeling, which is what she does. She channels some entities that are called the ancients who give her, you know, this divine information. So I'm hoping that she will connect with the ancients when we do the show next week and we can hear some of their messages.
Oh, that's going to be awesome. All right, everybody. So we'll look forward to chatting with everyone next week for another episode of Paranormal Horizons at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And don't forget, you can re-listen to this show Saturdays at 10 p.m. Pacific time on KITCFM.com.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
You have been listening to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Pat Rice and Jason Ophir. Be sure to come listen to the show next Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on Blog Talk Radio. And also, check out our Facebook at Paranormal Horizons on Facebook.